Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Chavez himself said at one point he said, the best way to help the Bolivarian Revolution is to prepare the conditions for revolutionary transformation in your own countries.
That's the voice of Jorge Martin, International Secretariat of Hands Off Venezuela. On this week's show, we speak to Jorge about the ongoing struggle since the Venezuelan election and the inspiration we should take worldwide in our own revolutionary struggles. Stay tuned.
Los amantes del odio caerán cual demonio, con eterna pena, alma sin calor, sin luz, sin perdón, sin amor, sin Dios. Amén. Al dueño del circo, al payaso, al bufón, siempre preocupado, bocón mercenario, mi pueblo dice no, no, no. Al fascista, al golpista, al que importa violencia, perros de la guerra, al vende patria, mi pueblo dice no. Mezquina, la lengua sin rostro que engaña y divide al burócrata sordo, mi pueblo dice no, no, no. Al quinta columna, traidor infiltrado, lobo acartonado, carnet desalmado, mi pueblo dice no. Medios golpistas que enferman la gente, sembrando en la mente psicótica muerte, mi pueblo dice no, no, no.
Al imperio le digo
no,
al Transcolombia le digo
no,
a la deuda, al ALCA, mi pueblo levanta su voz.
Fuerte el pueblo.
That was the incredible lyrics and music of Jovis Nando Cantos. And melody truly is a call to action to every human being on this beautiful earth who stands against our colonial past, our history of imperialistic violence, and who imagines and works to create a world with equity, a world with justice. I'm very privileged to have Jorge Martin, who exemplifies many of those characteristics. He is someone who has been tirelessly informing the world about the incredible example that the people of Venezuela have posed to the world. Very privileged to have you on our program. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. It's a pleasure for me to be here again. And that was a really good song by Jovis Nando Cantos. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's something that a song brings us together. But in many ways, I think the song is so powerful because it speaks to the path of imperialistic hubris, that, you know, this arrogance of imperialistic ways of simply trampling down on people's dignity, on people's countries, and assuming that this can be the new status quo. And so I think we should begin our discussion there, because while Venezuela has presented as an example of participatory engagement where the communities at the local level are engaged in transforming their society, we are seeing a lot of intervention via, you know, the media, the economic policies, and now the regional politics of decentralizing some of the achievements that have taken place. So can we talk a little bit about what's happening right now after the election of President Maduro?
Yes, obviously the elections were won once again by the Bolivarian Revolution. Maduro won the elections, although this time the margin was narrower, but still is a significant victory after 14 years of Bolivarian Revolution, a constant campaign of sabotage on the part of imperialism and the local oligarchy, the local capitalist class. It's quite significant that still 7.5 million people went out to vote in what was a very contested election, with a turnout of close to 80%. And voted to defend the Bolivarian Revolution, 7.5 million, while approximately 7.3 million voted for the opposition candidate. But what was different this time was that the opposition refused to recognize the election results. They said there had been election fraud, and they started a campaign which continues today of trying to delegitimize the elected government. And it's kind of a long-term, low-intensity war of attrition against the revolution, which involves attempts at not recognizing the results, diplomatic pressure, economic sabotage, hoarding of basic food products, and it still goes on to this day. I don't know if you realized, but in the last week there's been a lot of talk, although it was then denied, but the President Santos of Colombia hinted that Colombia was going to sign a treaty with NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and with the view of Colombia joining NATO. Now, NATO is clearly an imperialist military organization dominated by the United States, and it's composed mainly of European and North American countries, so Colombia doesn't even fit the bill from a geographic point of view. But in any case, this is yet again a clear provocation against the Bolivarian Revolution. This was preceded by some statements by Obama when he was visiting Mexico, that he said he was very worried about the lack of respect for democratic rights in Venezuela. So it's a constant campaign which continues to this day. So the revolution is still alive, but it's still in danger from imperialist intervention, as you were saying, in collaboration with the local ruling class, which is resisting the fact that they no longer control key elements of political power.
In many ways, I think that we can call this an aggression on the workers of the world, because when you think about what has been the The greatest achievement in the revolution in Venezuela has been the kind of power the workers have achieved within this movement. If you contrast that to what is happening in Iran with impositions and the sanctions being against the productive capacity of the country to undermine its currency, to undermine its political and economic, you know, well-being, as a way to debilitating, and you know, then you become easy to take over. But let's talk a little bit about the difference in politics, because on one hand, the government, the media tells us that in Venezuela there is a need for democracy, while we ignore the kinds of belligerent and overt aggression, you know, that happens in Honduras, for instance, you know, where with the highest homicide, where we ignore what is happening in Europe, you know, with massive demonstrations of people on the streets denouncing, you know, this proposed austerity and the high unemployment. So, you know, talk a little bit about the significance that this has had for worker struggles and the way that this new weight of invasion and imperialistic intervention is becoming the status quo. It seems that now we're crossing yet another threshold with the invasion in Libya, you know, the so-called NATO countries coming to free the people in Libya, and now a possible invasion in Syria.
Yes, obviously this is all linked up. For 10 or 15 years, the Bolivarian Revolution has followed policies which are contrary to the policies implemented in advanced capitalist countries. For instance, there's been a massive increase in the number of university, higher education students, which is higher education is free of charge in Venezuela. There's been a massive increase in the number of people receiving state pension, state old age pension. There's been a massive increase in expenditure in education, in healthcare. Workers' rights have been enshrined in the law. There's been a reduction of the working week. There's been a reversal of privatizations. There's been a whole number. For instance, casualization of labor, outsourcing has been outlawed. And so this obviously runs contrary to the policies implemented in most capitalist countries around the world. And therefore, Venezuela is the threat of a good example. But yes, as you say, Venezuela is only one part of a worldwide movement towards revolution. People are saying enough is enough. This crisis of capitalism, which started 5 years ago, is the most severe crisis the capitalist system has suffered since the 1930s, or even probably in many cases it's worse. And people are saying, why should working people all over the world are saying, why should we pay for the crisis of capitalism? It's their system that's in crisis, and they asking us to pay for the bailout of the banks, for the bailout of the rich and the powerful, the wealthy. And this movement expresses itself in different ways. For instance, we've seen the overthrow of Ben Ali and the overthrow of Mubarak in Tunisia and Egypt. These were dictators. There was a formal semblance of formal democratic procedures, but in reality it was a dictatorship. And these were two pro-United States, pro-imperialist dictatorships that were supported by United States and the European Union governments. They were overthrown by mass action on the part of the people. Similar process has now started in Turkey, where there is a Muslim conservative pro-capitalist government of Erdogan. And he was supported by the United States. The European Union was in negotiations for him to for a country to join the European Union. And now there's been a big movement, which is not only about democratic rights, which is to a large extent it is. It's not only about religious versus secular, but it's also about the fact that the economic growth of the last years in Turkey has been at the expense massive growth in inequality, massive concentration of wealth at the top, particularly the businessmen in construction industry, particularly around Erdogan and the ruling clique, and a massive amount of speculative capital that's gone in because they privatized all state companies. And now people are saying enough is enough. And I'm sure, and I have spoken to people in Turkey, they have been, to a certain extent, inspired by these other movements, by the movement in Tunisia and Egypt, which showed that mass revolutionary action in the streets is the only way to change things, to achieve anything. They've been inspired also by the protest that you mentioned, the protest against austerity policies in mainly in southern European countries, in France, in Italy, in Spain, in Portugal, in Greece, which is obviously only around the across the border from Turkey. They've been inspired by this, and many people in this protest in Turkey, they consider themselves anti-capitalist, consider themselves revolutionaries, and there's been a big implication of the workers' movement. So I will say that what we're witnessing is a general worldwide situation which is very turbulent, which is one of revolution and counter-revolution, where the limits of capitalism are being exposed in the eyes of not just a few activists, but in the eyes of millions of people who are starting to take action. Even in Canada itself, we saw the movement in Quebec, the massive student movement, which went on for months and months with hundreds of thousands of students participating. And it's about basic questions, the right to education. If the capitalist system can't even guarantee basic rights which were won by the workers' movement, by the labor movement, by the trade unions over many years of improvement of working conditions, now even those gains of the past are under threat. And so the basic contradiction that is between the most basic needs of people for housing, for education, for healthcare, for an old-age pension, enter directly into conflict with the continued existence of a system, capitalism, which is based on private profit for a small minority of unelected capitalist bankers and landowners. And it is in these conditions that these conflicts are developing. And this, ironically, also makes U.S. imperialism weaker in a worldwide level, because they cannot intervene everywhere as they will want. I mean, in the past, they would have probably sent an invasion task force to Venezuela. Now this is very difficult for them. It's not that they are not intervening, but the conditions in which they are intervening are more difficult, because they still have hundreds of thousands of soldiers in Afghanistan, in Iraq, tied down in a war they cannot win. They have now conflicts emerging elsewhere, in Syria, in Libya, which escape from their control, and they want to intervene everywhere, but they're forced by the position as imperialist power, but they are overstretched and unable to control everything.
You know, it's so important that you point that out, because while it seems that the multitude of invasions and the multitude of aggressive occupations, of which Canada also has participated quite willingly, would signify that we're under threat, but at the same time, you're pointing out that we're also expressing our own power. And I think that when we look at it in that sense, in the way that people power always pushes back as well, we too have the ability to transform and create a society on different terms. And I think I want to focus on that a little bit, because now that the revolution in Venezuela continues, you know, the song said, no pasarán, they will not come back, they're not crossing. There is a line that we've set up in the sand, and this line needs to be protected. So what does that mean for us in terms of deepening the revolutionary process that has taken place in Venezuela? What can we do to institutionalize this level of participation and democratic process?
I have said before that, I mean, the revolution in Venezuela has gone very far and has sustained itself for a very long time. Its main motor force has been the combination of this particular relationship that existed between Chavez, the revolutionary people, the revolutionary workers, which have been the main motor force of the revolution. But there are still some challenges that need to be addressed. First of all, the economy is still a capitalist economy, and there's large sectors of key strategic industries that are still dominated by capitalists, private capitalists, foreign multinationals, and they use their economic power to sabotage the economy. And this has become obviously clear in the last few months, where there's been scarcity of all basic food products, flour, maize flour, sugar, rice, even toilet paper, toothpaste, and all sorts of things are missing from the supermarkets. And this is the combination of deliberate sabotage of production, but also the dislocation of the normal functioning of the capitalist economy in a revolution. The economy needs to be nationalized. The commanding heights of the economy, the key industries need to be expropriated and put under democratic workers' control. The second one is the question of state institutions. State institutions, some of them have changed, some of them has been partially transformed, but they are basically still a capitalist state with a bureaucracy. And Chavez hinted at the fact that we need to move from this old state apparatus towards a communal state, a state based on the communal councils and the power of the communities. And I think that this is the only way forward, a state that is based on the revolutionary committees of workers in the workplaces, of workers in the neighborhoods, in the working class districts, and so on. Because bureaucracy, and this everyone accepts, is one of the main obstacles for the revolution to go forward. Bureaucracy is deeply entrenched in the leadership levels of the Bolivarian revolution. And the last one is the question of revolutionary leadership and organization. There are many organizations, there are many rank and file bodies, but the main political parties and institutions in Venezuela, like the PSUV, the Socialist United Party, which is the main ruling party, is still very undemocratic, you know, with appointment of candidates to different level elections from above without participation of the rank and file. The Congress has not taken place for many years and is not scheduled to take place until next year. So the rank and file has no organic way of participating in deciding the future of the revolution. So I think that these are the three things that need to be addressed. And if you want to summarize them in one sentence, basically, is the revolution needs to be completed. Revolution's been going on for some time, has achieved many things, but it has not been completed yet. And there's nothing more dangerous than a revolution that stops midway.
I want to point out that the revolution is also one that implicates us outside of Venezuela, because solidarity links will be the difference as well, whether the revolution is allowed to deepen in its impact and create new models for us, or it's, you know, stalled and continuously aggressed upon by attempts, you know, and coups in all kinds of forms, economic coups and military coups. I mean, there's different ways of debilitating, you know, a country. So what do you see as the role of international community in this process, and how do we engage in a way that advances the changes that have been achieved?
Well, I will say there's three main things. One is to spread truthful information about what is really going on in Venezuela against the campaign of misinformation, lies, and half-truths in the mass capitalist media outlets, TV stations, newspapers, and so on. Because, for instance, I'll just give you one basic fact. In Venezuela, the number of people in higher education has increased from 800,000 in 98 to over 2.1 million now. I mean, this is a basic fact. Nobody knows outside of Venezuela, a very small minority know. And it's just a demonstration of the policies that are being implemented, say, in Canada or in the United States or in Europe, completely contrary to this basic fact. So spreading of truthful information and breaking the media blockade is one point. Second, building active solidarity. Hands of Venezuela campaign and other campaigns are engaged in this. Picketing the embassies whenever necessary, the U.S. embassy, whenever there's a particular threat of action and so on. Building solidarity, organizing demonstrations, organizing speaking tours, and this is all very useful, obviously. But finally, Chavez himself said one point, he said, the best way to help the Bolivarian revolution is to prepare the conditions for revolutionary transformation in your own countries, because this is what debilitates imperialism. And what we have now is one worldwide system of capitalism, imperialism, and therefore you cannot have socialism in one country. Even in Venezuela, they managed to complete the revolution in the next period. They will still be linked to the world capitalist market and subject to the at the mercy of it. So we need socialism, a new fundamentally transformed system based on human needs and not on private profit, which is socialism, needs to be developed worldwide, not in one country, not in one small island in the Caribbean. It cannot. It needs to be a worldwide movement. But I think that now the conditions for that are much better. Activists in Europe are watching what's happening in Venezuela. Activists in Tunisia got inspired by the Venezuelan revolution. Activists in Egypt got inspired by the Tunisian revolution. And all these experiences crossing the borders, even to the United States, when, for instance, there was a big movement to defend collective bargaining trade union rights in Wisconsin. People got inspired by them, by the revolutionary movement in Egypt. So these things is a much more interconnected world in which we learn from each other.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being with us. How can people access more information about Hands Off Venezuela?
Well, there is the Hands Off Venezuela website, handsoffvenezuela.org. We also have a Twitter account, HOV Campaign. We have a Facebook page, Hands Off Venezuela. I'm also one of the editors of a Marxist website that carries a lot of information about Venezuela analysis and so on, which is called Marxist.com. And generally, people should get involved, get informed, get educated, and use this education and these ideas in order to agitate and organize.
What inspires your work? What inspires you, your resistance?
Yes, I mean, what inspires me is this basic feeling that we live in a world which is dominated by poverty, inequality, misery, war, plunder, and even in advanced capitalist countries, there are basic rights that are denied from us, and there is no reason for this. I mean, humanity has reached a level of development from a technological point of view, from an industrial point of view, where we could live in a world of plenty. And the only obstacle between these two things is the existence of the private profit capitalist system. If we can make a change, we can make a difference, is by actively participating to transform this so that we can leave to the future generations a world that is free of exploitation, oppression, and violence, and that they can fulfill their whole potential as human beings, which is now being denied from the overwhelming majority of the population.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.
Cambia lo superficial, cambia también lo profundo.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.